everyone, and welcome to episode 129 of season 11 of Movie Reminiscence, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and today, for a very strange reason, because I had a guest that unfortunately had to drop out at the last minute, and then I rebooked another guest, and he unfortunately also had to drop out at the last minute. So, for the first time in 1,330 episodes of this series, I'm actually going to be doing this one solo. Hopefully, it'll work well. So, yes, I'm here by myself to talk about what's going to happen now in episode 129. So, episode 129 begins with Winters interviewing for a new job, and ends with Webster answering Liebegott directly. So yesterday, when I had my guest on, Jim O'Kane, we talked a little bit about the man that we see in front of us. That is an actor, David Andrews, who plays General Elbridge G. Chapman. Winters is actually having an interview with Chapman to try to get a new position in order to move along and try to get to the Pacific as quickly as possible. So Elbridge Chapman was a general in the U.S. Army in the Airborne Division. He was born November 20th, 1895, and passed away on July 6th, 1954, at the young age of 58, which means that at the time that this is supposedly happening, he is approximately 49 years old. He is a major general at the time that we are seeing him, which means he has 2 stars. And just to give you an idea of what a major general is, so a 1-star general is a brigadier general, a 2-star general is a major general, a 3-star general is a lieutenant general. So the idea of 4-star general is a little strange because, I mean, they currently have anywhere between 37 and 44 active duty 4-star generals right now in the U.S. Armed Forces. Right now there are 12 in the Air Force, 9 in the Army, 8 in the Navy, 3 in the Space Force, 3 in the Marines, and 1 Admiral. Sometimes that switches around and stuff like that also. And the 4-star rank is temporary because it's connected to a specific command position, such as a branch of the chief of staff or combatant commander. And any officer who leaves their 4-star assignment, whether they're and they don't transfer to another 4-star assignment, they have to either retire or they go back to their 3-star rank. And there's also a rule that you can't have more than 25% of the branch's active general officers holding more than 2 stars. So that also can cause a little bit of problem here. And the idea of a 5-star general is right now there are 0 active duty 5-star generals. They don't use it anymore. There have only been 9 men in American history who've held that rank. They created in December 1944 during World War II in order to keep it on level with the British and French field marshals. The very first one was George Marshall, followed by Douglas MacArthur, Dwight Eisenhower, Henry Hap Arnold, Homer Bradley. The others are William Lee, Ernest King, Chester Nimitz, William Halsey, and Pershing was given it after the fact, after he had already died. George Washington also was given it posthumously. So was Ulysses S. Grant posthumously. Those are the people that have been five-star generals. Just to give you an idea, as of today, you know, each branch of the service has their own different type of rankings for people in various positions. So the Marines have 32 current major generals, and the Air Force have 129, which is just mind-boggling thinking about the fact that there are so many people, you know, in the Air Force that are at this level. I mean, each major general usually commands like a division-sized unit, which is anywhere between 10 and 15,000 men. Back to what we were saying before, you have the 1-star general, which as we said is the brigadier general. You have the 2-star, which is the major general. You have a 3-star general, which is a lieutenant general, and a 4-star general, which is known as a full general. Here we have Elbridge Chapman. He was the division commander of the 13th Airborne, which is what Winters is trying to get a job on, and he remained the commander of the division, and throughout World War II, he never commanded anyone in action itself, which is also pretty interesting. You know, the fact that here you have an airborne commander that he was basically doing a lot of staff work at the time, and wasn't really he implemented a lot of interesting things. You know, he never commanded any division in action itself. So, as we mentioned yesterday, the actor playing Chapman is David Andrews. I'm familiar with, and many people are familiar with, because he, first of all, was played Pete Conrad in Apollo 13. He played Frank Borman from Year of the Moon, and he played Robert Brewster in Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, which basically is the idea that he's one of the people who let the Terminator or let Skynet eventually go online. So, you know, we can sort of blame him for that, or in some ways, or his character. So he begins his interview with Winters, and he says, "Wounded in Normandy," and we can hear typing throughout. So again, this is another, probably a Tom Hanksism, you know, a Tanksism, T Hanks thanks ism along the way. And Winters responds and goes, "Yes, sir, in the leg. It was a minor flesh wound." The general continues reading and goes, "Company E lost 24 men killed there." "Yes, sir. 17 of those were in my company commander's plane. Went down on E-Day." "So you were given command of the company on D-Day?" "That's right." And you know, then the typing gets a little louder as we're moving along here and stuff like that. And then we get a flashback scene with this is one of the few times that they actually give us you know, true flashbacks, and we get to see Winters in the middle of his combat, you know, with what he was doing during the Battle of Brecker Manor. And you know, he's giving orders to the men, and we hear him say, "Fall back to the original positions. Everyone else maintain the base of fire." And then we see him running through the trenches and comes across the dead body of Hall, which is you know, one of the few men that he lost because of something that he ordered at the time, one of the first ones, as soon as, you know, because he joined in with them through the attacks on D-Day itself. And I mean, I really like the way that they do this flashback by giving us the typing in the background, because it makes it feel as if this is like someone's giving a report, or someone's you know, basically trying to you know, keep track of everything that's been going on. And here we are in the 10th part of the series, where we're sort of recapping, you know, the life and history and command of Winters as he's trying to find a way to actually leave Easy Company, which is something that nobody really wants him to do. The general continues talking. He goes, "In Holland, they bumped you to Battalion XO." "Yes, sir." And he looks at him, and he gives a big like lets out some air, exhales, and says, "The bastards took your company away." Which something that Winters himself was not happy about at the time, and even afterwards, because you know, for him, these were his men in his company. Even though he was above them, and we saw the with what happened when they got to Foy, you know, the whole thing where he was trying to still command his men, you know, from afar, when Dyke wasn't doing what he needed to do, and he was rushing forward to go try and help them himself. So, you know, he felt a strong connection, as we all know, which makes a lot of sense. And it's really funny because, you know, in the middle of this interview, there's like, I guess Elbridge's aide is just like walking around, or Chapman. Chapman's aide is like walking around in the background. You know, you'd think that this would be a little more private than it is, but you know, there isn't much that really can you know. I we'll find out why he's sort of taking this, and then we hear a phone ring, and then we're back to another flashback, and we see Winters come across the crest at the crossroads, and we see him come across the young German, and we see that he shoots him, which is basically this is the final German that he has killed throughout the whole campaign, I guess you could say. And Winters then says to him, "Yeah, I fired my last shots there." "The whole damn war?" "Yes, sir. You got through Bastogne without having to fire your weapon?" "That's correct, sir." "You were on the line the whole time?" "Yes, sir." So again, this is also reminding us as to what Winters was doing throughout throughout this entire year of fighting with his men. And I mean, David Andrews gives a really good performance here because it shows that he's a commander that has sympathy for Winters and everything that he's gone through. It works really well. And then get another flashback, and right before the flashback starts, Chapman says to him, he goes, "I can't imagine a tougher test for a leader, having to sit through a siege like that under these conditions." Winters goes, "Well, we got through it." And then we get another flashback here of him running through Bastogne, through the forest with a whole bunch of other men also running around, trying to find some sort of shelter. And we see Babe, then he jumps into a foxhole and gets a tree to fall over him. And we hear someone scream, "Find some cover, find some cover." A lot of explosions, shouting, "Find some cover." So again, this is a great way to intersperse the whole thing and show Winters' affinity towards the men of Easy as, he's once again debating leaving Easy. So the general then says to him, "So why do you want to transfer?" He goes, I'm sorry, sir." I said, "Why do you want to leave your men?" "Oh, it's not that, sir. It's just that the war is still on in the Pacific and I can do some good over there." Chapman looks at him and goes, "Are you looking to have your own division someday?" "No, sir." And he goes, "Not going to make a career in the army?" "No, yeah, well, I don't know, sir. Because if you think you need more combat experience to get stars on your helmet, let me tell you something, son, done enough." And, basically Chapman looks right through Winters here and knows what's going on with Winters. And, in some ways, maybe he's been there. Maybe he's known other people who've been there. I mean, as I mentioned before, the fact is that he himself didn't see any combat in World War II, but he did see combat in World War I. And, he was rising in the ranks during that time also, because, he joined the army in 1917. So he's still, he does have combat under his wing with things that he's done over the years, over the decades. I mean, come on, it's 30 years that he's been in the army, basically. Almost. It's 28 years at this point. Winters says, "Thank you, sir, but that's not my objective." And then Chapman looks at him and goes, "Major, I took this meeting out of respect for your achievements and for the 101st. If they do go to the Pacific eventually, you should be running one of the battalions." "Thank you, sir. Frankly, I think your men have earned the right to keep you around." "Yes, sir." "Thank you, sir." And Winters realizes this is basically a futile argument. There's no way that he's gonna be able to convince Chapman at this point to let him transfer, because Chapman realizes how important it is for Winters to stay with his men, and we understand this too. This is something that we've seen throughout all these 10 episodes with Winters, that Winters is a man who is so connected to his men, and for him to just want to get up and leave, it already shows that he's trying to put the army above all. But Chapman sees right through that and knows that his men are more important than the army, especially if he's not planning on continuing his service later on. So the two of them salute each other, and that's how that scene ends. And then the scene changes. And we see a pastoral farm. You can see a bunch of sheep there, and you see a jeep driving towards this little farmhouse. And we get narration from Winters. And Winters says, "So I would stay in Austria for the time being, waiting for orders and trying to watch over soldiers who had no enemy to fight." And then we get to see that in this jeep that's just sitting on the crest looking at the farm, we see three of the men. We see Webster, and we see Liebgott and Sisk. Webster and Liebgott begin a conversation, and Webster goes, "Lieb, I f***ing hate this." "Oh, Jesus Christ. They figured him. He was in the f***ing room, Web. One of those Polacks that was at the slave camps. This is where the guy lives." "Which camp?" "Whatever camp. I'm under direct orders, and I'm happy to follow it." And at this point, he gets out of the jeep, cocks his gun, and starts moving forward. And, we get to see another great performance here from friend of the show Ross McCall and some of the other actors that are here also. And Webster just sits in the jeep, not really sure where he needs to go here. what he wants to do. And then he gets out and starts moving after them. And he goes, "Is this a personal thing, Joe?" And the guy turns around and goes, "What? Is this personal to you?" He goes, "No, it's a goddamn order." Webster then says, "Does Major Winters know about this?" "Doesn't matter here." "Oh, the f doesn't. What if this guy's just a soldier? What if he's an officer with no ties to the SS? What if he's innocent?" The guy just stops and turns to him and goes, "You know what? What if he's a Nazi commandant of slave camp?" And Webster goes, "Well, which one? Which camp? You don't have any proof." He goes, "Were you at Landsberg?" "You know I was." And I really enjoy this argument that these guys are having here. I mean, especially given the I guess you could sort of say the controversy about Liebknecht, about whether he's a Jew, whether he's not, why does he hate the Germans, and obviously, anyone who heard my conversation last week with Ross McCall, he basically helped leave things open-ended, that it could go either way. It could be that Liebknecht's Jewish, and it could be that he's not, and it doesn't really matter. It strengthens the character knowing that he's Jewish, especially in scenes like this, where here he is on his way to do something. I mean, we'll only find out tomorrow what exactly it is that he's supposed to be doing here. But it's still great to see the breakdown and the way that they set up this discussion between Webster and Liebknecht, which again, ironically, they're the two translators. Both of them will understand what's going on with the Germans, but they're there on orders, and we'll also get a little more into that tomorrow, where I'll explain what that really means of why they've been given orders. Because I mean, in the book they explain it much better, but here in the miniseries they don't really explain how this is considered an order. It seems more as if it's just something that okay. Liebknecht found out that this guy's been in hiding, and now we're going to go and try and figure out what's going on with him. That's the way that the whole thing is perceived, and it makes sense with the way that they do that to help give it a lot more weight. The fact that the job that they're tasked with doing here is in some ways a thankless job, but in other ways, this is the type of job that Liebknecht is very happy to do and happy to carry out. It makes you wonder why they send Webster and Sisk with them. That's something that's not really explained. And part of this story, I mean, this again, I'll talk about it more tomorrow. But the people that are part of this whole thing in the story, I mean, like Webster wasn't part of the story. It's something that for the movie they decided to add him in here. In the book it was Moon, Liebknecht, Sisk, and Lynch. Those are the four that were sent to go do this, and given this opportunity to watch what's going on with these men. I mean, one of the things that I love about Part 10 is the fact that the war is over, and what they're trying to show us is that the physical war against the Germans is over, but the psychological war is not over at all. These men are still going to be dealing with a lot of baggage, and one of them being that okay, how do we enact retribution on the enemy who, from what we know, caused a lot of pain and injury to prisoners and to anyone else who was around there. So again, it makes a lot of sense for them to put it together like this. I like what they do here. As Webster tells him that that I was at Landsberg, that's where this 5-minute segment ends. So now that I'm 130 episodes into this series, a lot of people have asked me, like, what made me want to do Band of Brothers? Like, why is Band of Brothers a choice to do it this way? There's been 250 plus people who have put out Movies by Minute podcasts, and most people, they choose movies that they like, and they go with some sort of theme, and I've never gone with a theme. For me, it's always been my theme basically is my favorite movies. So throughout the course of my journey over the last 5 years, so every single time, I have a large list of things that I would love to do. And each time when I get about 3/4 of the way through the season, I decide, okay, what am I going to do? Am I going to, what am I going to do for the next season? Do I want to do something that's connected to the number? Do I want to something different than all the other ones that I've done before? Do I want to do something within a particular genre? Do I want to mix the genres and try and do things? I mean, that's sort of what I did from the beginning. I mean, I did The Great Escape first, right? And most people know that story. I mean, the story with The Great Escape was a very simple one. I decided that I wanted to start a movies by minute project with a little bit of prodding from my good friend Jay. And I wasn't sure what movie I wanted to do. And I started thinking and I was looking. And obviously, the first one that came to mind was Die Hard. But I knew that Die Hard had already been done as a group project. So for me, that was not really an option because it's already been done. Why, someone who's a newbie who's trying something, you can't just do something that's already been done. You want to be unique. You want to have your own voice in this whole thing. So what I decided to do was is I went through my list of thousands upon thousands of movies and tried to figure out, okay, what is it that I want to do? And I basically narrowed it down to two movies. I said I want to do either The Great Escape or Bridge on the River Kwai. Those were my two movies that really made me passionate about trying to do them. Because again, it's a little bit of a niche. These are not movies that people even thought to do. Most people do movies from their childhood, do movies from the 80s, 90s. There's obviously a bunch that have been done since, but most people don't go to quote unquote the classics. And I said, okay, I'm going to look to try and do one of those two. My love for both The Great Escape and Bridge on the River Kwai basically stemmed from the fact that my stepfather, who for all intents and purposes was my father from the age of eight, he used to love watching war movies. I mean, he wasn't someone who had a background in war or whatever, but he would sit and watch them. Not on a regular basis or anything like that, but every so often I would sit and watch movies with him. And while I was watching these movies with him, they became favorites of mine. So The Great Escape became a favorite very early. So did Bridge on the River Kwai. There's a bunch of others that fit into that list of movies. Most of them are war movies, but they're also classic movies. And so I basically whittled it down to those two choices, and then I decided, okay, every Movies by Minute podcast that I've listened to, there's a duo, there's a team of people that are doing it, and I was like, okay, so I now need to find someone to do it. And part of my biggest issue is the time factor. I live in an area of the world which is either 2 or 7 or 10 hours or 8 or 9, whatever, whichever way, depending on where you're in America, ahead of everyone else. So then you have to find time to be able to record. And recording with people, you have to do it at a convenient time for them, not just what's convenient for you, but you also have a life. You can't do a show at, you can't wake up at that 4 in the morning and do it. Some people can. I can't. My family life and my real job wouldn't allow something like that. I needed to find something that I could do, I guess, in the early evening to mid-evening my time. So the Movies by Minute website, I decided to send out a request for someone who's interested in doing either Kwai or The Great Escape. And I actually got a response within a day or two. He and I, Tom, who was part of the beginning of The Great Escape, I'll get there in a second. We started planning it out. We felt that we had chemistry, that we could try and do something like this, and so we ended up starting to record. And part of the rule of doing a Movies by Minute podcast is that when you start it, you got to finish it, which was something that really bothered me. So we did most of our recording before it even went live, and through the course of the few months that Tom and I were recording stuff with various guests, over the course of those few months, we both started feeling that something was off. And in the end, after 47 episodes of recording together, we parted ways. From my perspective, we parted ways friendly. I don't know what his perception is, and I hope if he's listening to this, he knows that I have absolutely no animosity towards him and would love to continue some sort of collaboration with him. But for whatever reason, we haven't been in touch in 4.5 years. Because of that, I continued with The Great Escape. And so the course that I went through for this entire podcast was each season I chose something that a movie that I loved that I wanted to talk about. That is a at the beginning I went different genres because The Great Escape is a war pseudo comedy, I guess you can say. Then the following season I did Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, straight comedy with John Hughes. Third season I decided that I would basically break the mold and do Die Hard, even though it's already been done, because I wanted it to have my voice, something very different. And another rule of the Movies by Minute community is that if you start a franchise, you probably should and need to do the entire franchise. So season 4 was When Harry Met Sally. Season 5, I went back to Die Hard and Die Hard 2. Season 6, It's a Wonderful Life. Again, if you look at it, every one of these movies is from a completely different genre besides the Die Hard movies. Season 7 was Die Hard with a Vengeance. Season 8, I went to Saving Private Ryan, which I wasn't sure if I could do it at first because I kept thinking to myself that, okay, you know, people want to listen to someone who has a military background to talk about the military stuff. And it was my good friend Jay and also my good friend Alan, both, they convinced me that it doesn't need to be. You know, people want to hear the quote-unquote everyman voice. They don't want to necessarily hear someone talking about all the technical aspects of the weapons and stuff like that. Because we're watching a movie. We're not watching a historical thing for it. Now, while I was doing my Saving Private Ryan season, so another friend from the show, Chris Henry, got me in touch with George Luz Jr., who is the son of one of the men of Easy Company from Band of Brothers. So with Saving Private Ryan, that was the pretty much the first time that I decided I was going to start doing mass interviews. I mean, I did do an interview during the first season with David McCollum from The Great Escape, which I still cherish that interview that I did with him all those years ago. Since then, he has passed on, but I still love that conversation that he and I had back then. And so I spoke with George Luz, and one of the things, you know, we talked about the connections between Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers. And I always had in the back of my mind that I'd love to do Band of Brothers, but most, if not all, of the Movies by Minute podcasts have been about movies. They're not about TV shows or miniseries. And that just seems like a very big undertaking. And it wasn't something that I really decided that I wanted to do at that point. So I put it on the back burner. Then I did season 9, where I did both of my Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, just to get them out of the way. And I broke my mold there and did it 5 minutes at a time instead of 1 minute at a time, so that I could do it all in 47 episodes and get through those two somewhat painful movies quite quickly, but still finish the entire series at the same time. And then I decided to go for season 10 to do another favorite of my childhood, Taking Palom 1-2-3. Again, when you look at all the movies that I've done, they all are very different. There's really no pattern except for the Die Hard stuff. But if you look at Beyond the Die Hard, there's no pattern. That there's nothing that you can look at and say, okay, this is the reason why he chose these movies, besides the fact that they're movies that I love. That's about it. And then while I was in the middle of Taking Palom 1-2-3, I was debating, okay, how am I going to move forward? Where am I going to go at this point? And I was sort of looking for a little bit of a challenge. But also, ever since I had my conversation with George Luz Jr., I had this nagging node in my head that, oh, I still would love to do Band of Brothers. And I just didn't know how I was going to do it. Because again, it's a miniseries. It's not a movie. So I debated it for a while. And I consulted with various people to see their interest in it and stuff. And I realized there was a lot more interest in it than I thought. And from what I understand, and I could be wrong about this, I believe that this was the first time that someone in the Movies by Minute community was doing a miniseries, minute by minute. And again, because, and I've said this many times over the course of this season, because it is so long, I decided to do it 5 minutes at a time. But I still had 137 episodes planned out, which is still quite a big feat. But I'm never one to shy away from a challenge anyway. I mean, if you just look at my website, you'll see that my movie review website, I have nearly 14,000 movie reviews. You know, I also have, and anyone who's listened to me talk about this, I have a goal that every month I watch 100 movies. So, I mean, these, to add another challenge of doing Band of Brothers is just, I added to the idea of, you know, a new challenge that I want to take hold of, that type of thing. And I guess everything just went from there. The idea was, is that you know, I started asking around, seeing if people were interested. And again, I got a lot of interest from people. And once I saw that I had the interest, and I decided to plan it out, to work it out, that I was also able to get in touch with people that are related to the story of Band of Brothers. Mostly, it started also through George at the same time. You know, I spoke to him. He was enthusiastic that I wanted to do it. He was willing to get me in touch with various family members and other people that are connected. And little by little, over the course of this entire season, I think I did 20 interviews with people that are connected. And I mean, I'm not a radio personality. You know, I don't really do interviews like this. And I loved the interviews. I thought it was great. I thought it added so much to the structure of this season, and also it added to the various voices, and for us to learn so much more about the Men of Easy, and to learn about the production, and learn about how it all was done and stuff like that. So that, in a nutshell, is my explanation as to why I decided to do Band of Brothers for season 11. You can find me very simply, just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So I will be back again tomorrow, apparently once again by myself, but until then, hurry!